Hello, friends, and a good morning to you. This is Just Norm, and it is indeed Saturday, July the 26th of 2014. I am running out by the Dunedin Causeway on the way out to Honeymoon Island once again. No particular rhyme or reason for why I chose this route. It was again one of those last minute decisions. And while I was leaning towards the trails of Hammett Park, two separate vague factors popped into my mind. One, mosquitoes. I don't particularly have a big hang up about mosquitoes. It was just a little gentle iota of a nudge towards pushing me up to the more urbane setting to do my run. And the other factor was, while I really would have liked some peace and quiet and serenity, I guess at some level, and now I'm really reaching, digging deep to think of why this may have been, I just arbitrarily decided to come up here, which means at some level, I may have just wanted to hear some cluttery noise in the background. For some reason, even unbeknownst to me. But the important thing is, I'm getting some miles in. It is a steamy West Central Florida day. I don't know what the numbers are, but suffice it to say that it feels like a sauna, and the sun is shining brilliantly. But a bit of carryover in my frame of thinking this week is that I have unconsciously succumbed to the notion that since the weather is hot and uncomfortable, therefore, at times making the run less pleasurable, that I would understand it and accept it. And that might just very well be a long-winded way of saying I've been using the weather as an excuse. I put that hypothesis to test on Tuesday and Thursday when I went out to the Triple C in the late afternoon, where the temperature was much hotter and soaring into the 90s with a heat index close to 100, but still managed to string together some respectable mileage numbers. We know I don't like to get enslaved to the numbers, but I felt a bit bad about the 2, 3, and 4 type offering I'd been giving over the past couple weeks. So I got 6 3/4 in on Tuesday, and I got another 5 1/2 in on Thursday. And this morning, it is about probably just a little bit after 8 a.m. But the plan today is to get 7, maybe even 8. Start running again. a right turn. I don't quite know where I'm going in this neighborhood. And there's a pickup truck behind me trying to navigate. I might be going to a dead end here. I usually try to circle the neighborhood loops before I take the road out to the causeway to extend my run out to about 7 or 8 miles. 8 would be really, really something I'd be fairly proud of. 7 as well, but not as much as 8. 5 or 6 is something that is expected and should be no lower than that as the standard. I woke up this morning. My girls were getting ready to go to the flea market. And I popped out of my bed to get my run on. And then we will do something family-ish later today. Oh, it's a cul-de-sac. I'm at a dead end. All right, so let's turn around and use the same road. Take me back out to alternate 19 highway. I'll pick that up and run north to the Kirk of Dunedin. And I will wind around the back of the Kirk and then through the Scottish Towers condominiums and weave my way up towards the causeway. It's been quite a week, folks. Still careful not to complain, but simply sharing my thoughts and feelings and experiences in life with you. And again, hoping and prefacing that my comments are not viewed as complaints and whining, but rather a sharing of feelings that you might identify with. And I touched on that on a walk break that I recorded on Thursday over on the Spreaker platform. And it was in response to not only how I felt, but listening to, excuse me, I have some mucus. I'm trying not to snort. But in response to Kevin Unplugged, where he shared some thoughts about where his running and training was, and it inspired me that he wasn't complaining, he was just sharing. And then, as well, when I took a quick peek at social media this morning, I saw that the host of the Seeker podcast, Jim, left a comment on my last podcast entitled The Last Shelter. And he said, and this is loosely phrased because I didn't memorize it, he said, "Dude, you are the most non-complaining guy I've ever met or heard." He said, "Do you see the irony here? I'm complaining that you're not complaining enough." And that was a bit of affirmation and reinforcement that felt good to me. And it prompted some further thoughts. Let's pause for traffic here for the thoughts. All right, so I got up the road a little bit. Had to beat some of that main highway traffic. I'm at the Kirk now. I'm walking behind the building. I'm on a walk break. And I don't want to lose my train of thought. Remember I said, come back for the thoughts? So while I was running, I held on to those thoughts. But then my mind wandered in 17 other directions with what I thought were some good thoughts, but let's stay on task. just lost the thought. I wanted to expound upon... Oh, I know what it is now. Thanks for indulging me. I got a mind that's scattered. We know that. So, I got to thinking about that comment about how I'm not a complainer. And I felt the need to explain even further. Now, I've already shared with you that I'm afraid it'll be viewed as negative and it'll turn people off. But that in and of itself stems from a belief that I have. And that belief is that when one or when we complain, it's then a breeding ground or feeding frenzy for others to join in and complain, if it didn't turn them off and make them turn away. And when multitudes of people complain, such as like in a group of friends or colleagues or some sort of framework. Morning, guys. Then it sets an air of discontent and it breeds further negative thinking and it breeds more dissatisfaction with circumstances and or life events, and it breeds unhappiness, and it breeds bitterness, and it breeds anxiety, and it breeds depression, and the list goes on and on. It's like fire. It spreads like wildfire. So, if you're like me, maybe you are, maybe you're not, all those emotions I just mentioned, sadness, depression, anxiety, dissatisfaction, complaint, hopelessness, all those things are something that I've recognized that I have within myself that can shape the way that I think and behave and live my life. So I have made, with the help of the heavens above and those that live in it, a concerted effort to steer clear of complaining because I know what the end result is going to be. I don't want to feel like that. I don't want to feel depressed. I don't want to feel anxious. I don't want to feel hopeless. I don't want to be negative because it adds to or creates emotions inside of us that are not good, that can be debilitating. So I choose to consciously watch either what I'm saying or what I will allow myself to ruminate on. Remember, I was the ruminative runner? Well, I still am, but I've changed, or I try to continually change what I'm ruminating about. And that's why I don't complain. And to further clarify, as a human being, there are times when I do complain. There are times when I catch those thoughts in my mind. Morning. And it's the art of paying attention to myself, having a keen sense of, and this is a gift, this is not, hey, Norman, look at you. This is a gift that I've been given, to have a sense of self-awareness, to catch and properly reorganize those thoughts so that they don't fester in my mind and shape the way that I think and live. So, I wanted to share that with you. I don't know if you knew that about me. I don't know if you do the same thing. And I think it's a little bit different, excuse me, than somebody saying, oh, I can't complain, it wouldn't do any good. Or, oh, I can't complain, nobody would listen. No, I'm not talking about that. Although that is a good attitude to have. I'm talking about going deeper and guarding your mind, your heart, and your thoughts so that you are able to live, at least internally, successfully, without adding more distraction of the negative. I think I spoke a couple weeks ago about how there have been new studies lately, and this is old hat, but there's been some recent studies that I caught ear of on NPR that talked about stress in our current culture and society, or worldwide even. One of the things that they said could attribute or lend itself to that was the news media catastrophizing and dramatizing all the horrific stories that are going on about the world right now, with the addition of graphic videos and images. You know, if they say Bob Smith fell out of a building, well, guess what? I don't need to see the video of the man crashing to the sidewalk. I don't need to listen to the drama and the superlatives and the addendum. All I need to know is that some poor gentleman fell and his life has ceased, and that it's unfortunate. And in my heart, I will grieve privately and or appropriately and move on. There's just no need for that extra stuff that we're getting. As a society, we're getting a lot of extra stuff, not just in the news media and graphic imaging, but across the board. Buy this, get that, you need this, we can give you that, have more. It's gluttony and overindulgence in 2014. So, and I'm guilty. Sometimes I fall prey to it. Sometimes I want more. Sometimes I eat more. Sometimes I take more. We're human beings, we're not perfect. But these are some of the things I've noticed, and some of the ways that I've tried to adjust my life and my mind and my heart and my soul. Because after all, it is indeed how we adjust and adapt as humans and as organisms to life that keeps the quality and quantity of life changing. Would you agree with that? That's a pretty broad statement, but I'll say dot, dot, dot now. I think I've preached it quite enough. But, that's what I felt in response to those remarks from the Runnet community. So, another couple of things that, and again, this will demonstrate my next conversation, my humanity and my frailty. I am, as my coworkers would say, the liberal tree-hugging softy. But I wear that badge proudly. And so I saw these two particular patients yesterday, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. And I'll keep the contacts very broad so as to keep security and privacy. I won't go into details, but I want to sketch it out for you such that you get the idea of how I might have felt, how they might have felt, and just some transection, some souls across the continuum of life and what they brought about. So I guess we'll start with the morning. And I met a patient who was a remarkable study, and he was referred to our service for what's called screening. There are a battery of tests that we do to humans to assure that they don't have any preventable diseases. And I usually gather not only any complaints elicited at that time, but the patient's medical history and or their social history. Because it is, I'm a bit old-fashioned, all part of the way you should practice medicine. I am a bit old-fashioned as I see medicine hurtling towards insanity at a unquantifiable pace, I prefer to slow it down just a bit and treat each person as the mystery and the beauty of life that they actually are. So the gentleman had no complaints. His social history was unremarkable for things such as smoking or drinking or illegal drug use. He was gainfully employed. And as the discussion went on, as the subtleties of conversation will elicit, he shared with me a fascinating story about his own experience. Excuse me. Something itching my leg there. So, this gentleman, who's in his mid to late 50s, shared with me that in an earlier time, we're talking many months to years prior to coming for this screening assessment, he was a heavy drinker, a poor eater, a cigarette smoker, and he was, as he stated, just living like crap, you know? And some of us can get away with that for our entire lives. And some of us, it catches up with. So for this gentleman, in the past, it had caught up with him. And it caught up with him in such a major way that he suffered what I'll term a cardiac event. You know, where they have to shock you, and you're probably staring into the sky and turning blue. You get it. And he was successfully resuscitated through emergency services and one of the local area hospitals. So let's pause on that for a moment. Can you imagine? Could you imagine if you grasped a part of your body in shock and pain, and within moments you fell to the ground, losing consciousness, and those flashes of life that may or may not have gone before you leave an impression on you, and then you're brought back? Well, think about that. I mean, bask in that for a moment. Don't just hear the words. Oh, he had it filled in. Lucky, he's, you know, hey, he's okay. Don't just speed through it like that. Dwell in it. Try to place yourself in that situation. Thoughts of family, thoughts of children, thoughts of loved ones. Your life may be flashing before your eyes. Think of that. So after careful contemplation of that during the conversation, he then shared that he changed his lifestyle. Yep. He stopped the shenanigans. He stopped the smoking. He stopped the garbage food. He stopped overindulging in alcohol. He began a diet and exercise regimen. We've all heard this story before in social media and go, wow. But see it in real life. Sit across from somebody and listen to their story and see how struck you are, knowing that you and I are trying to practice those things, you know, and we're very, very well aware of the gift and the preciousness of life. Some people are not. Some people are walking around this earth, just living in the moment, looking to the future, without any direction, rhyme, or reason, or second thought as to how quickly it could all end. You know? So, he stopped all that, and fast forward, he had lost 80 pounds of excess weight. His job and his vocation and family is completely restored to him. And he shared with me that he walks 10 miles every morning before he starts his day. 10 miles. Actually, he said no less than 10 miles every day before he starts his day. I asked him what time he had to get up and do that, trying to negotiate some of the local traffic on the bridge here. So I asked him what time he had to get up to do those 10 miles. He said he awakes around 3:15 a.m. and it takes him about 3 hours to get that time in. What genetics? What mindset? What upbringing? What factors? What variables? What influenced this man to respond to his calamity? Those are the things that are hard to understand for ourselves and for others. We usually rejoice and become exuberant about them. But what are they? What are the subtleties? What causes the human psyche to say, I want to live. I want to be healthy. I have to change. And then find that self-discipline to do so. An interesting study. If I had more time to study it, maybe I'd understand it more. For now, I'm content that it's the mystery of the beauty of the gift called life. And there are things that we can't know in regards to all those variables. I'm on a walk break, but I always slow down right around here when I come up to the water, which is just so serene and breathtaking. I just want to kind of stand by it for a moment. Let's climb down to the rocks, shall we? This should be a running break, but I'm just going to pause here and get a couple little laps of waves. Hear the bird flittering off. You hear the stillness and the gentleness. The gentle, lapping, intercoastal waters. As I gaze down and look at the rocks of all shapes, sizes, and colors staring at me through the bottom, as I look out over the course of it, the different colors and hues that the water makes as it gets further away from my eyesight and has the sun shining on it from different angles and perspectives. That's too pretty. All right, let's get back to it. Get back on this run, get out of the rocks here. I'll be running across or along this waterway just a bit about, let's look back here. I guess you could say about 5 yards away from it and probably about 10 yards from the traffic that you hear. And I walked my way into another walk break. I'm gonna take it. So, yeah, the opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, two extremes. So the gentleman I saw in the late afternoon, this story was, well, it was opposite, okay? It's not a feel-good story. I was just sharing with you how I felt about it. And the way I felt about it was as follows. A gentleman who I had seen for many years prior in our system, who was what we call lost to follow-up. In other words, we were following him and then we just didn't see him anymore. We didn't know where he was going, what he was doing, but, you know, it's not the persona of the medical community to go after people like that. stop here. How you doing? Catching anything?
Redfish.
Yeah? Rock stone hill I gotta climb. The reason why I got all silent there is because I was walking towards a guy who from the back looked like a friend of mine. I was just gonna scream out his name, hey! But I decided to saunter up to him slowly and quietly, and when he turned around, it was not that guy, so caution was the better decision. So the gentleman was seen by our service for a known medical condition many years ago, and I had seen him on many occasions, and he was working through his malady. In other words, he was still supporting a wife and children and coming to work and trying to provide for his family, all while having this medical condition. And the treatment for the medical condition would probably have made him sick, so he didn't want that. He wanted to wait for newer therapies to come out so that he could still continue to work and provide for his family as well as be treated for his malady. Well, I respect that. I can't tell a person, no, you have to quit work or feel bad while you're taking medicine and you're trying to provide for your family. Who am I? It's one of the variables that's difficult to broach in treating patients in our current medical society. So, fast forward, he was referred back to our service and came in yesterday. I had not seen him in about 4 years. And let me just say that he looked ill. Okay, I had to pause this in the middle of the story there because I was on the bridge, the drawbridge, and the traffic was about 2 feet away from me, and it was just way too noisy. You can almost hear it overhead now. I'm directly under the bridge, but I had to get some quiet between us. So I apologize for that little pause. So anyway, what I was saying was that he looked ill. When I say he looked ill, what I'm trying to describe to you is, again, for the sake of privacy, picture somebody you haven't seen for a long time. And when you see them, their face is sunken in and the meat on their bones is less padded. And they look, the term is cachectic, wasting away. Okay, are you getting the picture of what I'm saying to you? And there were certain laboratory values that I was able to calculate that put this former patient of mine, dare I say friend, because we had cultivated a very good patient-client relationship, I calculated some labs which placed the illness that he currently had as serious with some fairly predictable outcomes. Am I being clandestine enough for you? Am I painting the picture properly? So, this begs the question again. What drives the human psyche? Clearly we have a man who was ill and responded to his illness, and we have a man that, perhaps dictated by financial and societal demands, did not or could not address his illness. What drives those decisions? Could he have stopped working and taken a disability, perhaps, and restored his health? Was there the thought that he was not as ill as he was? Was there a sense of anxiety and depression over having to walk around with the burden of knowing you have an illness while feeling obligated and trapped to support your family and continue working? Were their upbringing, there's a word I'm looking for, child rearing and upbringing, foundational thoughts and cultural beliefs that dictated his actions? Again, the mystery and the beauty of the human psyche and this gift and mystery of what we call life. Now, I will tell you that for me, in showing my humanity, I was at once thrilled with the success story and deeply, deeply troubled and emotionally duressed from the poor outcome of the second patient, such that it lasted, that troubled soul, on through the rest of my clinic afternoon and on into the drive home, even a little bit of my time home at a family. And I'm not going to lie to you, the man's face, mind, heart, and soul were in the eyes of my brain as I fell asleep last night. What point am I trying to make? I'm not. I'm trying to cultivate discussion and share thoughts on the things that interest me. The things of life. The joy, the pain, the heartache, the despair, the beauty, the wondrousness, the atrocity, the all-encompassing events, thoughts, feelings, and experiences as we go along, as we live our days, no matter if they stop at 23, 59, 62, or 110. These are the thoughts that some of us have and are before us. I am grateful that I am at least, and this is about the only thing I am, at least able to ruminate and contemplate these things and recognize them. I'll never have the answers. I may have a bit of understanding due to experience, but I'll never have the complete answers. I just know that we start and we end. And everything and every moment that we gather along the way is, in my view, precious and, for lack of a better word, wonderful. Not wonderful. Oh, that's wonderful. No, it's wonderful. Stop and contemplate those syllables and dwell on the phrase wonderful. Wonderful. Yep, that's what's on my mind this morning. And in typical fashion, I will trail off without some neatly packaged dialogue ending a well-produced podcast. Nope, it will be more like, that's all I got. I've run out of thoughts for the moment, and I don't want to force it. So this has been Just Norm. You have been running with me along West Central Florida's Dunedin Causeway out to the state park of Honeymoon Island, and you've been listening to Run Norman. And I hope you enjoyed running with me, and I hope you'll come back and listen again. Until then, please know that I love you. And I will be talking again. Make a bit of money on that. Bye-bye.